hey, folks, I'm WWE Hall of Famer Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Tito Santana.
This is Kurt Angle.
This is Bret the Hitman Hart. And this is going out to Scott and Holly.
You are listening to the
Win Twice Wrestling Podcast
with Scott and Holly.
Oh, it's true. It's damn true.
And this holds for everybody. Ho!
Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to listen to the incomparable Win Twice Wrestling Podcast with your hosts, Scott and Holly. We always go over, brother, and that's the bottom line. Dig it? So sit back, relax, and prepare to be entertained.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 33 of the Win Twice Wrestling Podcast, alongside your hosts, Scott and Holly.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm good.
You're good?
I'm good.
You had a good day?
It's all right.
Makes one of us. It's all right.
Now you spent it with me. Come on.
Well, that's true, yeah. And my wife.
True, yeah.
To be clear. Yeah, I mean, always coming back from a week off work is never the best, but to go straight back into just that work is less than ideal at times, but it is what it is. But pleased to be doing this.
Yeah, me too.
That's the main thing. Highlight of the week. Get out of the way.
Beverage in hand.
Of course. Well, not in hand, but close to hand.
It will be in a minute.
Close to hand. Excellent. Can you take off any more clothes, by the way?
I'm so hot.
It's a very... It's not unusually warm in the UK, but around these parts it's quite muggy. And this room in particular, it's a small room. It's an enclosed space. And it is a bit warm.
Yes, I've had to derobe.
Derobe?
Not completely.
Well, no.
Let's be clear.
To be clear. I'll be honest, I wouldn't be making much sense if she had, because there'd be too much going on. But we're not on the road to WrestleMania, which isn't the name of our series anyway. We're not on the march through the Manias either.
No.
We've gone to a little kind of mini-series which we've unintentionally created, which is the first ofs. We've previously done the first of Raws. We've done the first of WCW Nitro, we did the first ECW TV.
We're popping those cherries.
We're popping, cherries are being popped all over the gaff. And this time it's a blue cherry that's being popped in SmackDown. But before we go SmackDown, Holly, has anything caught your eye in the world of wrestling since we last did this recording? Because it's actually kind of 2 weeks since we've done this recording. So I'll give you the 2 weeks of lead-in
because
time.
The stuff I have written down was quite a while ago.
Doesn't surprise me.
Quite a while ago. MJF is back.
That he is.
And I saw, I actually watched a match he had.
Yes.
With, I've written his name down as Rush. I don't know if that's right. Thank you very much. Really good.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed it.
Yes.
Really. And I actually watched the full match, which normally I just watch clips of AEW, let's be clear.
Yeah, you're almost part of the TikTok generation, really, aren't you?
Yeah. So let's stick with AEW briefly.
Please.
Someone else I saw who I quite like him, but he never ages. Who am I talking about? Who do you think I'm talking about? He never ages.
He never ages.
He looks the same now as when I saw him all those years ago on WWE. Or, yeah.
Well, it's not Edge, because he's aged like a banana. Christian's aging like a fine wine, but he is aging.
He's aging, but yeah, well.
Jeff Hardy's gone.
This guy's just not aged at all.
From AEW?
Well, yeah, he was a previous...
He was a previous what?
WWE.
Oh, yeah, no, I assume so. I meant,
but
he's still currently in AEW. Well, Alistair
he's never
Black.
Won a... He's never won a...
Never won a title?
Well,
why is
championship
this...
belt.
This... Oh,
he was my guy. He was my pick when we did the people that haven't won a major belt.
Oh, Claudio.
Belt. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Fair enough.
Lovely. Absolutely delightful.
Oh, okay. You're on the Claudio train, are we, these days? Is this a new fascination for you?
No, I think he's always been there, but...
He's tall?
He's tall, yeah. He's
keeps great himself
physique.
In good shape.
Doesn't
nipples
age,
nipples for
clearly.
Days. Like his nipples,
really,
you could serve...
Stop,
no,
stop
his
pointing
nipples.
Out people's nipples to me.
No, come
really
on now. His
me.
Nipples are like roast dinner plates. You could put like meat, stuffing, potatoes.
Okay.
I'm sure you'd eat roast potatoes off his nipples.
I hate roast potatoes. And then the only other thing was, of course, Joe Hendry.
Well,
on NXT.
Did you believe?
Always. I'm a big fan.
Big fan
big
of Joe
fan.
Hendry. Yeah, I'm a big fan as
just
well.
Just is a sweetheart.
To be fair, who isn't a fan of Joe Hendry? He just seems like a nice guy.
Sweetheart. I think.
Just appearing on NXT was enough. And I heard as that was the most watched social media clip that WWE had since WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
That's saying something.
I know.
Seeing as he's never had exposure on that scale before. I mean, don't get me wrong, he's in TNA, he's doing good stuff there. But I don't know, it's promising. Promising. Yeah. That could mean that he's in...
cheeky little Rumble entry at some point.
Or imagine that.
Mm-hmm. That would be amazing.
And he eliminates Drew. During the last two, Joe Hendry to Hendry Mania.
I'm okay with that.
Even if it meant that Drew lost.
Yeah, fine.
Okay, fair enough.
This is how much I'm backing.
You're backing Joe, are you? Yes. Yeah, I'm sure you would.
Yes.
Oh, the only thing, what?
I missed that sly dig in there.
There's no sly dig. It was quite blatant, I thought. The thing I saw in wrestling which caught my attention was more recent. Was to do with the new bloodline, but more specifically, a particular wise man.
Oh, yes.
Now, Paul Heyman is a gift
to
professional wrestling. Everything he does is great. You know how you were saying about if we go back to WrestleMania 10 and we talk about the ladder match between Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon?
Yes.
Had you immediately?
Yes.
Every time Paul Heyman is on screen or talking, he's got my full attention every time. Everything he puts his hand to is entertaining. It might not always be successful. Like we talk about, ECW did great things there. The legacy that that company left, ultimately financially a failure, but a lot of good stuff came out of that. His commentary work, great. His managerial work, great.
Mm-hmm.
His creative behind the scenes work, great. And I was thinking about it recently, and we know how much of a fan I am of Bobby Heenan.
Yeah.
I think Paul Heyman, when all said and done, Paul Heyman will be considered greater than Bobby Heenan. And that is difficult for me to say because of how much I enjoy everything that Bobby Heenan did. But Paul Heyman is just, he's a, just a gift. Like the fact that for his whole segment with the Bloodline, with Solo taking over and kind of making a statement as being the new tribal chief, Paul Heyman looked like he was baked off his nut. His eyes were bloodshot red, crying. And he doesn't shave. Little details, like he doesn't shave for a few days. So he's got stubble. He looks unkempt. He's looks not troubled. Himself. He looks troubled.
Mm-hmm.
You can nurse him back to health if you like. It's one of those lost souls that you like so much. But I just thought it was brilliant.
Yeah,
and
really good.
Imagine how exciting it will be when he comes back.
With who?
Roman Reigns. Because there was talk of saying, what if he comes back with Brock Lesnar?
That's what I was thinking.
Roman Reigns has more... We've seen Brock Lesnar fall out with Paul Heyman in the past.
Yeah.
We haven't seen Roman Reigns fall out with Brock Lesnar. With Paul Heyman. Yeah. So I think it will be, it will be something to look forward to when we get there. Or even CM Punk, because CM Punk was killed off within the week as well, which we haven't mentioned.
No.
Drew McIntyre having quit and then turning up and laying out Punk. No one believed he quit. That's fine.
Yeah.
But still, engaging stuff. It's interesting. Yeah. I'm interested on weekly developments from the WWE side, which... Mm-hmm. For the most part, apart from sporadic periods here and there, hasn't been the case. So that's a credit to what they're doing, which is promising.
Yeah.
Means good things in the future, I like to imagine. But I think that's pretty much everything I had that I wanted to cover from this week in wrestling, or this fortnight in wrestling, as the case may be on this particular one. Got anything else you wanted to touch upon?
No.
No? Why are you laughing?
I don't know.
You look concerned about that. It was a genuine question.
Okay. No, I'm finished touching upon anything.
Oh, I see. Okay. No, not everything is meant in that way.
It's been a day already. This is only going to go one way.
Well, you're the one started taking your clothes off, not me. I did take my belt off, actually, to be fair. Yeah. Need to get comfy. The meat and potatoes are what we're doing today. Again, talking about popping cherries earlier, this is going to be the blue cherry of SmackDown, and we've gone to the very first episode, the inaugural episode of WWF SmackDown. And this was a bit of a difficult one. Not a difficult one, but it was different in the fact that it was originally scheduled as a one-off special that got turned into a weekly show. Because I remember when we were talking about covering this, we looked at it on the network, and there was one from April.
Yes.
And then there was nothing until the end of August.
Yeah.
And I couldn't understand that, because my brain doesn't remember the fact that there was this one-off special for UPN, or whatever it was at the time in the US. But we are covering the very first one, so we're doing WWF SmackDown, which took place on the 29th of April 1999. The venue was the New Haven Coliseum in New Haven, Connecticut. And I've got a little bit of background for you on SmackDown as a show. And then I'll give you the story as well. So this was from the Sportster. So again, I'll try and reference any articles that I take liberally from to explain things and set the table, as it were. So SmackDown has been a staple part of WWE television. From its earliest days to the modern day show that fans see now, it's evolved and changed in a number of different ways. However, it has also seen a number of incredible matches, memorable segments and talented superstars compete on the blue brand. The show has solidified an important place in WWE history. The story of how SmackDown came into existence is an interesting one, with its name even coming from an iconic line from one of WWE's biggest stars in history. Lay the SmackDown.
Mm-hmm.
The Rock.
Mm-hmm.
You look confused at that. Like you
just
were
my natural thinking face.
Okay. Ooh, okay. Interestingly enough, SmackDown was initially supposed to be a one-night special on UPN, airing on April 29th, 1999, and taking place at the New Haven Coliseum. The name of the show found its origin from the mind of The Rock, one of the biggest names of the Attitude Era. One of the catchphrases, "Layeth the SmackDown," is what inspired the name of the show. He even... I thought you were signalling my attention there.
No, so sorry.
He even referred to it as his show. On the show, it saw a number of matches featuring stars of the Attitude Era, such as Mankind, X-Pac, Ken Shamrock and more. In the main event, Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock defeated The Undertaker and Triple H of the Corporate Ministry. Spoiler alerts, but it's part of the article, so I'm reading it. However, as history has shown, this was not the last time fans would see SmackDown on their televisions. The SmackDown that fans have come to know and love made its official debut as a second show aired on August 26, 1999. During this period of time, the war between WWE and WCW was still very much alive and in effect. This rivalry between the two wrestling giants translated into a feud between the new SmackDown and WCW's Thursday night show, Thunder. The two shows would compete against one another for a time. However, due to the decline of WCW, this didn't last long as Thunder would move to Wednesdays to not have to compete with the more popular SmackDown. So that gives you a bit of background as to how SmackDown came to be. So they wanted basically to directly compete with WCW on two fronts. They already had the Monday Night Wars going. Let's try and get this going on Thursday. And ultimately they won out with how it panned out. For me, SmackDown was always more important than Raw.
Okay.
And it's very specific, the reason as to why. So over here in the UK, WWE TV, or WWF as it was then, was exclusively on Sky, bar the odd show that would be on like Channel 4 live, which was great because I've got a few of those on VHS that I've recorded over the years. And there were certain limitations to, depending on what type of Sky TV package you had, you could only access certain things. So when we had Sky, which was actually, it was ITV Digital, but you had the Sky channels through it, we didn't have the sports channels. However, one of the kind of main channels, so Sky One, would show repeats of SmackDown on a Saturday morning, I want to say. So I could always watch SmackDown. I hardly ever saw Raw because they didn't do the same thing for Raw. So to me, SmackDown was my show. It was the one that I had the most readily available access to. And at that time, so when would this have been? Like, I'm talking 2002. Three. So I had Sky way back when I lived in the old house, but then we lost it for a number of years when we moved initially. And yeah, so at the time when we got it back, it was Rey Mysterio, Edge, Eddie Guerrero, Chavo Guerrero, Kurt Angle, Chris Benoit. So the SmackDown 6 were really taking off. So it was a really fun time to watch SmackDown. When you were kind of like getting your, I know you were getting your VHS tapes over the back fence. Were you watching any of the weekly shows, or did you have access to any of the weekly shows?
No, see, I didn't have access to them. If I wanted them, I could have asked, but also not, I just didn't. It was like a, oh, this is on, can you record this for me, please? But I didn't want to take the piss, because then you take that away and I've got nothing.
Yeah, that's true.
So yeah, no, I was a terrestrial girl.
No, that's fine, there's nothing, I wasn't trying to, basically trying to find if you had an affinity to one of the brands more than the other.
No.
No?
I don't think so.
No, that's fair enough. Like, you don't have to. I just wondered, like, some people tend to lean one way or the other. And for me, it was always SmackDown.
Mm-hmm.
Now I can see both of them, but I still feel the allegiance to SmackDown in me, even though it's all the same company. I'm aware of this.
Yeah.
I'm not completely stupid most of the time. But, why do you laugh? But, you know, I just thought it was a worthwhile story to mention as we're covering the first ever episode. So we'll go to the show now. Brace yourself for the warm and fuzzies as the Attitude Era opening graces us with its presence. It doesn't take much to please me, Holly, but this always does.
Proper nostalgic.
Really great.
Yeah.
It never fails to deliver.
Mm-hmm.
From here, we're immediately taken to a VT package that shows referee Shane McMahon crack the WWF title off the head of The Rock, allowing Stone Cold to hit a stunner and retain the WWF title in the process. We see The Rock says... Oh, that even sounds like I'm quoting him there.
The Rock says...
We see The Rock says he has but... We'll ignore that. Has but one problem, and then calls out Shane McMahon, who says to the great... What? Calls out Shane McMahon...
Right.
No, I've written this, and do you know what's bad? I'm pretty sure I read some of it back, and that's just absolute dribble. We see The Rock says he has but one problem, and then calls out Shane McMahon, who says to the Great One, and then I've just finished the sentence dead there,
So
we don't know what he says. Shane tells The Rock, okay, I was so good, I wanted to write the fact down that Shane says it twice, which he doesn't. Shane tells The Rock to take his attitude out of his face if you smell what the boss is cooking.
Mm.
Now, take... Your attitude out of my face is petulant, stupid, moronic, not a good catchphrase. And I thought, do you know what? I'll let Shane have that. I'll let him do that, you know, because I'm gracious like that.
Sure.
He can do it the once.
Okay.
He says it later. And it winds me up. It's just so stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Take your attitude out my face. Is this Mean Girls?
Well, maybe.
Does it not seem like a line from that?
Yeah, true.
It just, it doesn't. It's not good. If you smell what the boss is cooking, I'm actually okay with.
Fine.
Not quite sure why Shane-O didn't just tell The Rock to get fucked, but I guess they still have limits to what they can say.
Yeah, that would have done it.
yeah, just get fucked. That'd be great. The corporation then proceed to beat down The Rock. On Raw, The Rock challenges Shane to a match, which he accepts, and I can smell the shenanigans from here. A lot of smelling. Already.
Oh.
That was unintentional as well. A lot of smelling. Like deep heat. Having been to wrestling shows, deep heat is a common thing.
Yes, that sticks in your schnoz as well.
It really does. Mm-hmm. It's a nose hair stinger is what it is. Right on cue, the Mean Street Posse jump The Rock, who easily fends them off because they are fucking jokes, but eventually Triple H and China put the Great One down. Do you know who the Mean Street Posse are?
Are those guys in like the knitted...
Yeah.
Vests.
Yeah.
Who the fuck are they?
Sleeveless cardigans.
Yeah.
So they are actually Shane McMahon's childhood friends.
Oh, okay. I shouldn't know who they are, right?
Well, you wouldn't have come across them.
Yeah, okay,
unless...
cool. You're not going to... I was meaning, like, you're not going to go, oh, that's so-and-so and so-and-so.
No, you won't know who they are.
Cool.
No, unless you're familiar with the work of Pete Gass.
No.
One of them is called Rodney as well. Anyway, it doesn't
matter. Okay.
I'm sure we'll have another opportunity to go over the Mean Street Posse in more detail, but they were childhood friends of Shane McMahon. Who briefly got wrestling careers out of it, I guess.
Okay.
Not good ones. Stephanie jumps into a limo and asks to be taken to her dad, and a Kevin Thorne-looking dead man asks, "Where to, Stephanie?" before laughing like the villain in the shittiest horror flick you could imagine.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, ah.
Very Dick Dastardly.
Dick Dastardly, that is a great reference, and you are not wrong. Also... She already said where she wanted to fucking go, mate.
True.
Take me to
fucking
my dad.
Listen.
Where do you want to go? Take the fucking bat or whatever you macabre bastard people put in your ears and listen to what the girl said, for fuck's sake. We then see the mad scene of Vince being blackmailed with Stephanie being held hostage, and he asks for Stone Cold's help. This is the same VT, by the way.
It's a very long VT.
And it's rapid, so it took me bloody ages to get through this alone. Austin says all he needs is Vince to kiss his ass.
Okay.
Vince will probably do it as well, seeing the text. In what appears to be a sacrificial ritual, Stephanie McMahon is brought out on a symbol, can't call it a cross, as it then has like religious tones, and that will get certain groups up in arms.
Mm-hmm.
My God, Stephanie looks so young.
She was.
Oh, did you look up the age?
Yeah.
What? How old was she?
23.
Great age.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's just... She seems like such a sweet girl, then.
Innocent here.
Yes, very innocent.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely been popped, but innocent looking all the same.
Well, she didn't have her giant assets at this point.
No, Tess wasn't with her at this point, I don't think. Actually, he was. I think Tess and her were dating at this point in time.
Lucky girl.
And then she went from that to Triple H. Jealous? Paul Bearer then conducts a ceremony to marry Stephanie and The Undertaker until the glass shatters and Austin storms to the ring to raise hell. Stephanie hugs Austin after he unties her, and we hear JR decry that Stone Cold has put an end to the Black Wedding. Vince thanks Austin as he's reunited with his daughter. Holy shit, the original SmackDown intro. This takes me back to the original PlayStation and playing the namesake's game.
Yes, I had that. Yeah, I had that too. It proper took me back.
To the point where I forgot it existed. Yes. And then I heard this and went, oh my God. And straight away, I could like feel and sense and smell everything childhood about that time frame. It was great. It was so good. That hit me better than the Attitude Era opening. Yeah. Really hit. So you played the original SmackDown game?
I did. I had it on my whatever console it was.
PS1?
Yes.
Okay. So was that your first wrestling game?
Yeah.
And your last one was...
God.
You got one of the 2K ones not too long ago, didn't you?
I don't know.
I thought you did.
Like, honestly... Oh, no, I borrowed it. I didn't have it. I borrowed it.
Me?
No.
No?
No. No.
Oh, you've got your sources?
I did. I don't anymore.
Oh, is this a certain big individual?
Yes.
Oh, how did I not know that? That's great. Well, it's not great. Wait, so they were a fan?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Well, not listening to this, are they?
Mm-mm.
Oh, I hope they are, actually. That'd be great.
I don't. Dick.
Sorry, I wouldn't be awake long enough. As soon as the intro finishes, we get a decent in-ring fireworks display as the cameras then begin to pan the packed arena where there are almost as many signs as people.
Right, so I...
You're starting with the right, Mike.
Yeah, I know.
I cower. Like, I do. You're going to start shouting at me.
I know, I shouldn't. I should stop doing that, because I do it when I text people too. I start with a right, and I'm like... But I don't mean it in an aggressive way. It's more like a, oh, let me focus and answer this question. But if I was getting that from someone, I would take that as being aggressive.
Not always, though, because sometimes you go, when you're about to deliver, can you believe what this fucking person just did? You go,
yeah.
Right, and I go, oh, shit's getting real.
Yeah.
So then, yeah, like, look at what this guy fucking did. And anyway.
Signs. Okay. There were so many.
There were.
Fine. All I can think when I see them, though, is I'd be fucking livid if I was sat behind this absolute chump with a sign.
To be fair,
if
you were there, you'd probably have a sign, because everyone had a sign.
Yeah, some more exciting than others.
I think I might have commented on a couple of them.
I've got one.
Oh, okay. It might be the same one I have, so that'll be interesting.
More
so
than likely.
So do shout out when we get there, please.
Okay.
I will be honest, I was not prepared to hear Michael Cole on commentary.
No.
But I'm very happy to hear Jim Cornette is by his side.
Yeah.
Oh, dear, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. We'll dissect that a little bit later. Tony Chimmel now asks everyone to welcome to the ring Vince and Stephanie McMahon. And we're finally onto a first proper segment of the show.
I mean, we are, but still, I was like, bloody hell, is there any matches in this?
Yeah. Oh, there's
yeah,
definitely
there's
matches.
Couple.
There's definitely matches. Vince and Stephanie McMahon come to the ring. Stephanie McMahon looks like the epitome of the girl next door here, and she and her dad are flanked by four officers as they come to the ringside, assumingly due to her recent abduction. Surprising to hear cheers for these two.
Yeah. Didn't last long.
Nope. Do you know the biggest giveaway that this is 1999?
Show us your puppies.
The show your puppy
Yay!
Sign. I see immediately front and centre in row three.
Yes. Yes, I got that too.
And when I saw it, I took my top off for
the
TV
you?
Screen.
You showed your puppies?
I showed my puppies,
oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I let them out for a little
stroll.
Give
them a little shake?
Yeah. I'll leave that there, because I was going to go down a very dark hole, so to speak. I assume you didn't do the same then?
No. Well, it was warm when I was watching this, but not that warm.
Fair enough. Well, keep it going in a minute. You might be there. Vince says, no. Yes. Vince says he's proud to stand in front of the people and proud to be standing alongside his daughter.
Mm.
Vince says that he hasn't been proud of some of his business decisions, and the crowd start to chant, "Asshole," which he agrees he has been. These days, we're more concerned about what might be coming out of this man's asshole during sexual escapades, but I digress.
Jesus.
Vince says he's been ruthless in business and says that at times it has come at the expense of his family, and says it is time he starts to right that wrong. Can't unfuck the whores, though. McMahon says that he's going to take a moment in the future to smell the roses and thank those that have made him the man we see before us today. Holly, before I carry on with the rest of this, do you know what has just struck me? How long Vince's neck is?
Okay.
He looks like a Caucasian swan.
Oh.
It's like really...
Never noticed like that before.
Obviously, because he's working out.
Yeah.
And obviously, he was working out here then as well. But it's really elongated, and I've never noticed it before. Maybe it's the suit or the particular time frame.
I didn't even notice.
Because I feel like he would usually have, maybe back in the old Blazers, he'd have shoulder pads. So you couldn't tell, so it took away from the height. But it was very elegant. Very elegant and swan-like.
What a thing to notice.
I know, but then I saw it, and then I couldn't not see it for the rest of the time he was in the ring. However, we see him later in the show. Didn't spot it then.
Fair
because
enough.
Too much else was going on. But here, when you're just talking, microphone in hand, in between thinking about his dirty, dirty actions,
yes.
I thought about his neck.
Okay.
No?
No.
Vince wants to thank the world's most dangerous man, Ken Shamrock. Big Show, whose heart is every bit as big as his 500-pound frame, he'll have us know. And Stone Cold Steve Austin. The mention of Austin's name has the fans cheering, and Cornette on comm says, "Whoa, did you ever think you would hear that?" And Cole's response, "Never." Not cheering Austin, the fact that Vince has thanked him. Stephanie now has the mic, and she would also like to personally thank the same three men for helping her. She says she was taken against her will, stripped of her clothes. Careful, Steph. This is what your old man would consider a good time. Steph finishes the point by saying she was dressed in a black gown for an unholy wedding. She had never felt so powerless and violated in her entire life, which are two of the words Vince finds most arousing.
Oh my God.
Stephanie said the Undertaker kept touching her and whispering in her ear, saying she was his. Now, this is almost word for word, apart from the Vince bits that I'm adding in there myself. She wants to reiterate her thanks to Austin from the bottom of her heart and soul, and hopes Undertaker burns in hell. You enjoying yourself so far?
Sure.
Vince hopes Austin can hear him, as he would like to make him a promise. But before we can get to that, Shane O'Mac comes out with the corporation.
Honestly.
We see China in her transition phase, as the enhancements are in place, but the jaw is radiating Jimmy Hill vibes still. Holly, Triple H with a ponytail and tights. What are you thinking?
I do note. He does not look right in tights.
He doesn't, does he?
Does it? It looks so weird to me. The ponytail, I vaguely remember seeing him with one of those before.
He used to have facial hair with that still.
Yeah, but the tights really threw me. And he's wearing one of the tops that I fucking hate. Hate them.
Sleeveless shirts?
No. It's a sleeveless shirt, but there's no sides. So it's a bib. It's literally a bib.
Yeah, it is.
I hate them.
Yeah, that's
so bad.
I was trying to think. I was like, I'm sure it's just a sleeveless
shirt.
No,
it's not. Because I thought, oh, it's just a drop armhole. Okay, fine. Don't mind that. And then
drop armhole.
Yeah, like where your
arm... Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Okay. I've never heard of the phrasing before.
So I thought it was that. And then he moves and I was like, ugh, he's wearing a bib.
So given the fact we're probably like looking at the show, genuinely at this point, about 10 minutes... to 15 minutes in, not seen any wrestling.
No.
What's going through your head? Because I'd actually messaged you and said, you're going to have some fun with this.
Fun was the push.
This wasn't the part I was referring
to,
I'll be honest. No. This is the part you...
This is my tiresome part. This is just someone do something,
This was the perfunctory foreplay that no one's really interested in. They want to get to the main event.
Absolutely.
At this point, were you thinking I was winding you up?
Yes. Absolutely, yes. I mean... I'm also looking at who's there, thinking, oh, okay, like, I know that person. Who the fuck are these guys dressed from Wallace, like Wallace from Wallace and Gromit?
Brilliant.
Like,
shots
so...
at Pete Gass.
Nothing wrong with, like, a pullover, but really, really.
And I wrestle in that as well.
Oh, God.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I was getting a little tiresome by this point. Restless is the word.
Restless. Yeah. And wrestleless as well.
Yes.
In many respects. Shane asks his dad what he's doing here, but says he doesn't care and didn't want to hear it. Shane O asks why, when his sister was in trouble, did Vince not ask him and the corporation to make the save? My question to Shane is, why the fuck do you need to be asked? Go and do it yourself, big man. It's your fucking sister.
Mm-hmm.
Do you need to be asked to do everything? Really wound me up, as you can tell. Shane asks Vince what kind of person his dad thinks he is. Vince goes to answer, but is told to shut his mouth. Shane is sick that the most ruthless man in the history of business is coming out here and apologising and thanking Austin. Shane doesn't give a rat's ass about Daddy's little princess or Vince. Vince says maybe he will give a rat's ass about this and takes a step forward, but Triple H and China step in between. Shane tells the Hounds to step aside, and then tells Vince to get the attitude out of his face. Is this dipshit trying to start a catchphrase? Because this is not the one, Shane, my boy.
You're not going to start using that on the regular.
Get the attitude out of my face! Ooh! It's just so weak. It's so weak. Oh. Shane tells Vince and Steph to get stepping.
I did like that. Get to stepping.
Get to stepping. And Vince says that maybe someday Shane will be a man, but tonight he's just a petulant little boy.
Fair.
I thought he was going to say bitch, to be fair, so I was getting excited for that. But Vince,
did you also
trying.
Want them to tell him to get fucked as well?
Yeah. Yeah, I did, actually. That'd be great. Shane says that if they get in the limo, they can be home in 35 minutes and watch the rest of the show on TV. Arsehole chants once more in full voice for Shane now. Shane says there have been two thorns in his side, The Rock and Stone Cold. Triple H mouths to him, The Croc.
Okay.
Which was a play. So this was an angle that took place, I want to say it was in 97, 98, where The Rock was still part of the Nation of Domination and they were feuding with DX.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a skit where DX basically dressed up as the Nation of Domination, which is as ropey as you think it might sound, and Triple H played The Croc. So he came out as The Rock.
Yeah.
And, I think X-Pac played Mark Henry. Yeah, okay. So I won't go into more details. We'll probably get to that point. So Triple H was just doing a bit of a throwback to that time. Shane continues by saying that Rock and Austin will team together to take on Volunteer One, Triple H, who's pointing at his chest like a kid who wants to do a big boy poo.
Oh, I hate that as well. Like, when people, at dancing, when you'd ask for a volunteer and kids would go, me, 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 I'd be like, I'm fucking picking you now. Just to spite them.
They're children. Come on.
Yeah, but like to see a grown man do that's icky.
Oh, is that an ick?
Yeah.
That's another thing that we need to start
featuring in this show.
Me.
It's weird. I don't like pick me people. It's weird.
Just get...
You want me to find one?
Anytime you see an ick,
yeah, okay.
I want you to go, hey, boom, ick.
Okay, well, he's already got one from that stupid shirt.
So the shirt, the tights, and now the pick me, pick me.
The tights, I'll let him off. Like, oh, that's good. They don't look right because I know him only to be in pants, but they're not. Yeah, the shirt is horrendous.
So after Triple H has volunteered himself... Shane then cleverly says, are there any other takers?
Mm-hmm.
The lights go out.
Mm-hmm.
We see Taker on the screen, The Undertaker specifically, and he says that on Monday night, Stone Cold played the role of spoiler, but tonight Undertaker will play the part of judge, jury and executioner.
Mm-hmm.
Shane confirms that Taker will partner Triple H in the main event. Holly, I have a question for you. Can you feel the power of Shane McMahon?
What? No.
Can you feel the power?
No.
Okay, so that's another catchphrase he's not getting off the ground. Michael Cole and Jim Cornette do a sell on the importance of the main event, and they now wrestle through a number of upcoming matches, and Holly is seething.
I hate it so bad, and I know this is nothing to do with me, but I just don't want to know.
I know.
Let me have it as a damn surprise.
You did get some surprises, to be fair.
Yeah.
But we don't go to a match, not just yet.
No, this is exhausting.
Backstage, we see Jeff Jarrett walking hand in hand with Deborah, whose outfit screams, respect me, please.
Mm.
Double J is in his don't piss me off phase, and his flat top hair is every bit as bad as Surfer Sting's was good.
Okay.
Oh, this makes me sad. We hear that WWF needs a superhero, and I'm going to give them one. Woo! Yes, Holly, that is the Blue Blazer, Owen Hart, who at this point was less than 1 month away from his untimely demise.
That's sad.
The match. Well, the match I've written here isn't the match we actually see. The match I've got here, Val Venus versus Jeff Jarrett.
Oh, because you would...
Because they were introduced as being the match.
You'd think that would make sense.
Well, hello, ladies, indeed.
Oh, this entrance... I tell you what, I think I loved this so much because I'd just seen nothing for what felt like hours. But this brought me back to, like, just remembering this when I was younger. Not being interested in it in that way whatsoever, but it just was hilarious.
Yep. Holly, it happened. We're covering a Val Venus match on the podcast. Thoughts?
Brilliant. I'm here for it.
We're reminded of Nicole Bass's attempts at getting Val to give her a smash and how terrified Val appears to be of her. She's a hoss. She's a big gal.
Yeah.
Val would like to welcome all the ladies to invest in the Big Val Boesky's mutual fund and raises his arm to signal an erection.
Mm.
He says it's more often up than down, and he can guarantee that with this fund, there will never be an early withdrawal.
Yeah, I noted that.
Give you any feelings, that?
No, I'm perfectly fine.
And for that matter, actually, while we're on the topic, I'd just like to also invite the ladies to the Scott Stimulus Package that offers consistent, if unspectacular, rates, but does also run the risk of overselling the longevity of the growth fund, which instead can come to fruition early and come to said fruition hard.
God. Wow.
What?
Oh,
well, I thought if we're just advertising... What? Right, okay, who did it better? I'm putting you on the spot.
Oh.
Val or Scott? Or the big Scott Boesky?
Val.
Oh, well.
Okay. Well, you didn't put your towel on and do a little hip thrust and pretend to be mimicking that you were in the shower, you
I'll
see?
Save that. I'll save that something for you later. Save that for your missus. Oh, okay. All right. Bloody hell, she really doesn't want to see it today, does she?
It's hot. It's too hot.
Yeah, to be fair. Well, at least that means I'll be able to find it. They are clearly teasing that Val is smitten with Deborah and vice versa, as Jeff informs us that he doesn't know where Owen is, and that pisses him off. But Val can consider Jeff Owen's replacement. You can see why I thought this was going to be the match, yeah?
Yes. Val Venus.
Yep.
Was 28 here.
Okay.
But he looks the same here to me as he does for the rest of his wrestling time.
Okay.
He doesn't age. To me, it's that thing that I said ages ago. He looks old immediately.
He does look older than 28.
I'd say 38.
I'd have said mid-30s if I was...
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we're splitting hairs.
I'd say that's mid-30s.
But, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah? So 38 is mid-30s, did you say?
Well, I'm closer to that than...
No, you're not.
Oh no, I'm close to 35.
That's math.
I can't do maths anymore.
Apparently not.
But yeah, just thought it was interesting that he was only 28 here.
Yeah, no, I see that. Do you see how old Jeff Jarrett was?
I don't care about him.
Oh wait, hang on. Before the bell sounds, the blue blazer appears behind Val and tackles him to the ground, unloading right hands to the back of his head. The bell does now sound, and I guess the lineup was subject to change. Cornette tells Michael to knock his ignorance on the head, as we all know it's Owen Hart under the blue blazer mask. Venus is whipped into the ropes and back body drop before being body slammed moments later. Blue blazer goes up top and connects with a missile drop kick. Venus, now backed into the corner, takes a flurry of chops before reversing a whip, sending blazer into the buckles. Val misses the follow-up charge, however, but does quickly regain control and unloads with boots in the corner. We want puppies, chant. And the man with the puppy sign is positively jumping up and down with excitement. Val whipped into the buckles, but gets his boot up to prevent the charge. A number of right hands by the big Val Boesky results in two corner whips and clothesline charges. Back elbow drops blazer off the whip, and elbow drop swiftly follows.
I have to take the fucking cape off.
My next line, and I'm not joking, the cape really looks to be presenting an issue here. And this sadly won't be the last time that sentence is said, as Val connects with the suplex but emerges wearing the cape himself, yes, having managed to loop his head into an opening.
Mm-hmm.
Impressive, mm-hmm, actually. From the second rope, Val takes flight and connects with an elbow drop as Deborah marches her way up to the apron.
Of course she does.
She casually reveals her bra. And then I stop putting notes.
Oh, is that because you needed a minute or two to calm down?
Five. I'd say no.
It's
I don't turn myself on, I'll be honest. I do very little for myself. No, I did put notes. Val starts dancing in return, but big man, this is not your moment. Blazer misses with a clothesline, allowing Venus to score with a perfect plex and bridge. As referee Mike Chioda ensures that Deborah has returned the puppies to their playpen, Jarrett enters the ring and punts Val in the dick, as the crowd recoil and wince at the same time.
It's very upsetting.
I bet. Well, it wasn't even the wee choppy your pee-pee thing from Kai and Tai, which we haven't gone into an episode on just yet. Blazer gets the easy cover, and we get the 1, 2, 3. The very first winner on an episode of SmackDown is the Blue Blazer, yeah. Owen Hart. This somehow feels right to me.
Yeah.
Nicole Bass marches her way to the ring and reminds Val that he owes her one. One what? Is a fair query by Corny on comms, but the big talker is quick to take his leave as Bass makes to follow. What do you think of the match? What did you score it?
I thought it was all right. But very, I thought it was all right because it was so short. For the value of what was in it, I did only give it 1 out of 5 stars.
Okay.
Oh, what's that look for?
Well, I went a different way.
Oh, okay. But it was short. I didn't hate it. Maybe in hindsight, would I score it higher compared to some of the other stuff I see? Yes.
But you judge it in its own little capsule.
I do.
Which is fair.
In that little compartment.
So, 1 star.
Yes.
Okay. I gave it 2.
Okay. Fair.
It was all right. I didn't like the ending, but it's TV, so I factor in the environment that the match takes place in. So if it's at WrestleMania and we get a DQ finish or something like that, that is going to hit it hard for me. Whereas if we get a DQ finish on a TV show, kind of expect it, mm-hmm. so I'm not overly fussed. Yeah. It doesn't detract as much as it otherwise would. I gave it 2 stars. Thought the match was fine.
Yeah, it was fine.
We don't go straight into another match, though, because, Holly, the Ho Train pulls into the station.
This, right. Now, this is ridiculous. But fucking takes me back. And I just remember being like, oh, this is brilliant. So bad, but good.
I can't remember the last time I've had a Ho Train. I don't think I've ever had a Ho Train in my life.
Okay.
How many people do you know have Ho Trains?
One, him.
And Vince. But like his is storyline-wise.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. It feels like... Because he always looks so happy.
Well, of course he fucking did.
Well, he's still... They're on his payroll.
Well,
how much money's he got?
Well, maybe that's why he's so happy.
Well, that's true. Yeah, fair point. Didn't think that through. What a moron. Maybe I'll rent out one of these rooms for a hotel.
Well...
We're thankfully reminded on commentary that with Godfather beating Jeff Jarrett, Deborah was supposed to work as part of the Ho Train, but has yet to do so, and Godfather was here to, and I quote, collect his property.
Mm.
Ooh, mm. Misogyny. Ooh. Mm-hmm. Ooh, late 90s.
Mm.
But to be fair, if those were the stakes, did Deborah get to sign the contract? I don't think she's allowed.
I don't know.
Don't think she's allowed. How would you feel if you were put up as a bargain piece in a match?
I don't think that would ever fucking happen.
Like, it's going to be a sumo wrestling match between...
Oh, fuck off.
Well, hang finished. Fuck off. Between Randy Orton and Otis, and the winner...
Fuck off.
And the winner got to have a lovely time with Holly, but it's a sumo match. Mm. You've both... They've just gone, Holly, you don't need to sign this. This is... We'll take care of this. I'd be put out.
I feel like it'd be my choice, surely.
Well, it wasn't Deborah's. Why should it be any different?
It's a different time.
Fair enough. You make a valid point. Fine. Did you know women could vote?
No shit, really?
Well, I don't know. In WWE, they're so far behind the times. So they might get there eventually. Godfather hits the ring and clotheslines Blazer and Jarrett in turn before delivering a pair of rights to each man. Godfather signals for Deborah to hop aboard the Ho Train, or as Michael Cole calls it, to jump on the choo-choo.
Ugh.
With Blazer... That's an ick.
Oh, so gross.
Time to jump on the choo-choo!
So gross.
With Blazer distracting Godfather, Jarrett attacks the knee and the two men beat down the pimp. Spinning heel kick... Spinning heel kick, stroke... Which was Jeff Jarrett's move, so he wasn't having a stroke. That bit, well, maybe it was. And top rope elbow to the back, all connect in succession with a beatdown continuing thereafter. From there.
Mm-hmm.
The Rock chatting to himself backstage. In third person, to himself.
Always third. This I don't like. This drives me mad.
The Rock says that Stone Cold and he will be rubbing elbows now, and that the Rattlesnake will pick up a bit of electricity. Rock is going to make a bunch of candy asses famous again tonight. Doesn't sound right coming out of my mouth, does it?
No.
Candy bottoms.
Candy ass.
From there, not a match.
I'm aware.
Kevin, did you watch this show as well?
I think I fucking did.
Kevin Kelly interviews the Blue Blazer. Kevin says, well, Blue Blazer, it's been a while since we've seen you in the WWF. With the same tone you would talk to someone who just inserted 4 crayons up their bum and 2 up their nose. The Blue Blazer says he's back in the WWF because the WWF needs him. Kevin refers to Blazer as Owen, but the Blue Blazer denies he's Owen and says he's been looking for Owen as well. The Blazer says that the WWF has too much cleavage and that Val, he can't even say his name, but we know what it rhymes with, is deplorable.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is deplorable. The WWF needs a superhero like Blue Blazer who reminds the fans to say their prayers, take their vitamins, and drink their milk.
Ugh.
Woo!
Yuck. No, thank you.
But the Blue Blazer told us to do it.
The milk reference never goes down well.
No, that's fair. Big Show versus Test.
Finally.
Holly! Ponytail, Big Show and pants. Give me your take.
Yeah, no.
I think it's fine.
I mean, I don't hate it. I just don't remember him in pants. He needs the rest of his like
singlet.
Yeah.
Is he allowed a singlet then?
Yeah, fine.
But he does the.
He doesn't look
cock
great in it. Let's be clear. Wow. But
wow.
No, I know.
I think you look fine, champ.
No, but like it's the same as like Otis. Do you know? Not. Oh, how this is so. Piss poor explanation.
No, I'm gonna let you dig yourself out of this one. I believe in you.
It works for them.
Yeah.
Yes,
sure.
It also works for other people that are Trez more muscular.
Trez.
Distinguished.
Otis is a beefy lad.
Yeah, he's very strong.
Yeah.
Very strong.
Yeah.
But it works for yeah. It works for both ends of the scale. But I remember Big Show as not being in pants.
Okay, that's fair, I guess.
Sure.
Oh, fuck me, this show is ridiculous for your girl. First we had Val, now we have Tess, and then we have Splooge. Tess with a cheeky little braid in his hair,
mm-hmm.
and bike shorts on. Mm-hmm. Holly, thoughts again?
Yeah, I'm okay with it.
I bet you
I'll be honest, I'm okay with it.
Didn't have his PVC pants on, though.
No, I do like those, but this is fine. He was 24.
I know. Tough paper round.
24?
Tough paper round.
Gosh.
He was born 40, that lad. We see footage from Raw where Tess stood up to the Big Boss Man, who was blaming Tess for a mistake that he himself had made. Boss Man cracked Tess with a nightstick, and Shane O'Mac would cut Tess free from the corporation in an act of streamlining the organisation. The match begins, and Tess is firing away with a flurry of right hands to show, and we see Big Boss Man walk his way down the ramp.
Yep.
Tess is whipped, ducks a clothesline, and then fuck me sideways, Big Show connects with a mm-hmm. dropkick.
That's ridiculous.
Now, if that wasn't impressive enough, the monstrous choke slam that follows is a real treat, and we get the 1, 2, 3.
Fucking livid.
As quickly as it started, it finished just like that.
Livid.
When I saw this match start, I was like, oh, Holly will be pleased, and Holly will be furious.
I'm so angry.
Because that's why, so when Holly realised she was getting a test match, she texted me and went, test, yes.
Yeah.
And I said, let me know when you finish the end of the match. And then I just stared at my watch until you went,
so angry.
What was the fucking point?
So angry. They give us and they take us away.
Following the match, we get Bossman slide into the ring, but gets back down by Show until the victor leaves the ring. Bossman jumps onto the attack with a nightstick and begins choking Test with it until Big Show decides to make the save. What did you think of the match? And what did you score it?
Very upsetting. Very upsetting.
Yeah.
Not
enough Test.
No, there wasn't.
And his fans, the testicles. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, I bet you did.
I gave it 0.5, and do you know what? The 0.5 is for him alone.
That's ridiculous. I know it's your criteria, but that's ridiculous.
Oh, I know it's ridiculous. So stupid. Just don't do the match.
0.25 stars. Should be 0, but the dropkick and chokeslam deserved something.
Yeah, fine. There we go.
Not because one of them was there.
Leave me alone.
The Rock comes to the ring.
Mm. Mm.
Before we get to the arrival of the Brahma Bull, I cannot get over the two chodes in the front row behind commentary sat there with their tops off, wearing chains. Absolute bellends of the highest order.
Okay, well, if we're talking about what people are and aren't wearing...
Oh my God, are you about to put me under fire here?
Right. No.
Okay, you're Christ, fine. I thought you were going to say you look like dog shit.
I've just noticed...
Yep.
Well, not just, but when I was watching, obviously I made note of what people were wearing.
Of course.
That's what I like to do.
Yeah.
So Rock comes out. He's got sunglasses on inside, right?
Yep.
I feel like I just have to let it go.
He's allowed.
Yeah, is he? Mm. Okay, fine.
He's with Bret Hart Savage.
Fine, I'll let him have it. But he comes out in dress trousers.
Sexy.
which we already have a, I already have a bit of a beef with, and I blame Benoit for this because it's just dress trousers.
Wasn't coif hair.
A waistcoat.
Sexy, yeah.
No shirt.
No.
And a
fanny pack.
Big old chain. And I forgot this was the time where he had those really big sideburns.
Oh, yeah.
And I,
Johnny Bravo?
I just watched it and I was like, oh, yeah, we're a way off peak rock here.
Yeah.
A way off.
Yeah.
Just made me chuckle.
That would come in later in the year, to be fair, peak rock.
No, not for me.
When are you thinking peak rock?
Let me, I'll find it and I'll show you.
Okay.
Like, as in looks-wise.
Yeah.
Yeah, not for some time, for me.
Really?
Yeah.
So, like, after he left the first time, then?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, wow, okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
When he found his protein shakes.
Yes.
Oh, okay, fine. Rocky chants as the Great One enters the ring, and Michael Cole informs us that Shano excommunicated Rock from the corporation on Raw. You're right, dear.
I'm so hot.
Not Big Ed.
So, no.
Now, she ain't wrong.
Warm.
Either. Rock tells the fans that on Raw, Shane and Triple H, aka the Jabronis, booked themselves into the SmackDown Hotel, and the Rudy Poo candy asses, and the crowd join in, which The Rock is acting surprised by, because obviously he'd been a heel up until very recently, will not check out without a parting gift from The Rock, a fist in the mouth and a boot in the arse. Cornette says that's a very different from a mint on the pillow.
Yeah, I like that.
There you go, Cornette's like winning.
Yeah.
The Rock addresses the fact that although he's tagging with Austin, they're far from friends, and if he so much as steps out of line, Rock will put his horns straight up Stone Cold's arse. Didn't think it was that kind of show, I'll be honest.
Okay.
Glass shatters, and here comes the WWF champion on cue.
Mm.
Champ came out second, though, technically.
Technically, it's a promo. Yes. It's a technically, promo. His outfit was also interesting.
Austin, looking in peak form here, and he salutes Rock with a finger as he walks by him to stand on the buckles. Another finger and another corner. Make it three, and now we have the full house. And that, Holly, is bingo.
Yes.
Austin wants to remind Rock that to him, he's nothing but a punk kid coming out here and spitting out nursery rhymes. Stone Cold says he's going to break the Brahma Bull's horns off, wipe his ass, and put him on the barbecue. And that is all he has to say about that.
I'm just letting you know, behind the curtain, this is where I switched off, because I've even written here, more people come out, long story short, it's a lot of chitter-chatter that I just don't give a fuck about.
Ironically, my typing went a bit awry at this bit, because instead of putting Shano, I put Shio. Makes his second appearance of the night and is greeted with arsehole chants. He informs the crowd that these two fighting is just playing into his plan. The lights now go out in the arena, and the dead man makes his way to be standing next to Shane. We briefly see a red laser pointer dance over Taker, but that quickly stops as the corporate ministry appear on stage as Shane confirms the union of the two factions. Holly's riveted by this, by the way.
I was so fucking over this.
Speaking of reasons to cheer, Holly, Kevin Kelly interviews X-Pac and Kane.
I knew you were going to mention this.
Kelly says there is clearly some animosity between the two men, as following on from Kane being drenched in blood by the Brood... I'll tell you what, the Brood are fucking getting it later.
Oh, yeah.
They are, but... Okay, right, don't jump.
No, we'll get
there. He instead decided to lash out at X-Pac, who he chokeslammed over the barricade before doing the same at the end of the show in the ring after he was called out for his actions. X-Pac says that unpredictability is what Kane seems to like, and that is what we're going to get.
Long story, fucking short.
Match.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Draws.
Yes.
With Prince Albert
versus
D'Lo Brown with Ivory.
Yes.
So this match will be both simultaneously giving and taking from Holly. I suspect that Draws will be right up her alley, but he's also accompanied by a man whom she detests. That pretty much sum it up?
I didn't know who Draws was.
Okay, take off the hat.
That hair...
Okay.
It's inexplicable.
I'm sorry, I've seen Jeff Hardy say, so let's not worry about this.
But you see these people and you look at them and you go, oh, he looks like a bellend.
Does
she'll
Joss
like
get
him.
It?
Maybe at that time, yeah, sure, but... Yeah.
Well, you can't now, he's dead.
Well, as is, join the crew.
Give D'Lo Brown a little sesh if you want, Prince Albert's game.
No, but I really actually forgot how much I liked D'Lo Brown.
Okay.
Really, really liked him.
Interesting take.
Yeah.
There had to be a few, I guess. So
yep.
I don't dislike him. I've just not seen anyone get that excited about him.
I just forgot all about him. And Albert, I liked him when he was paired with...
Test.
Wasn't he with
Scotty Too Hotty? Yeah, he was the hip-hop hippo.
That's when I liked him.
Yep. So not even when he was with Test and Trish Stratus?
No. No, I mean, I've seen many a photo of that era.
That's just on my bedroom wall.
Mainly sent in our little WhatsApp group, but, you know.
Okay.
Yes.
Now I got concerned when I saw who his opponent was for the night.
Okay.
Holly, did you know about the unfortunate accident that occurred between these two men?
No.
On October the 5th, 1999, during a WWF SmackDown taping, so the same year, D'Lo Brown attempted a running powerbomb on Darren Drozdov, also known as Droz. Unfortunately, due to Droz's loose shirt, the move went awry and Droz crashed to the mat in a gruesome manner. This accident resulted in Droz fracturing two vertebrae, leaving him paralysed from the neck down and becoming quadriplegic.
Stop.
It was a tragic and true accident that significantly impacted both wrestlers.
Shin, I didn't know that.
After this, he was done. So it wasn't match that did it, but yeah, in October this year, running powerbomb, which I think he actually hits on him in this match, and he dumped him straight on his neck.
Oh.
Boom, done. So Droz only died, I think it was, not funnily enough, because that's not the right word, but with the AEW show.
Yeah.
Was it AEW? It might have been Money in the Bank. It was one of the shows in the UK last year. And D'Lo Brown was doing a signing.
Oh, he was doing a signing. Was it was Money in the Bank because Sam went, didn't he?
Yeah,
he
and told us, I said, like you have to do that.
Yeah.
But D'Lo had to leave because it was the day Droz died.
Oh,
and obviously all
shit.
This stems from the medical incident from the accident between them.
Wow,
and D'Lo Brown
idea.
Was really fucked up about this. So when I saw these two having a match, I went, no, this isn't it.
Oh, see, I wouldn't have had a clue.
No,
especially as I didn't Google.
Droz.
Either, yeah.
Because I wasn't sure if you did. I think I told you not to Google Droz because this is what you would see.
Oh,
you'd have seen
him.
You'd have seen him in a vegetative state, like he was in one of those wheelchairs that you move with your mouth and stuff.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was because he was like a, you know, good looking lad. Like I thought,
a big guy,
former NFL player, I believe.
Jesus.
Yeah, and that was how he unfortunately met his end in wrestling.
God.
He was also originally came in to the company as. Have you ever? Do you remember the Headbangers? Mosh and Thrasher, bald guys,
Rings
they'd have like dark paint there, they'd wear kilts and kind of.
Yes.
Yeah, he came in as he was going to be the third headbanger called Puke. And the reason he was called Puke is because he could make himself sick on command, basically. And there's a clip from, I think it's Beyond the Mat, and there's a clip of Droz interviewing in Vince McMahon's office, and Vince finds out that he can do this. And I think I've told you before.
Yes, yeah, this does ring a bell, actually, because it... Oh,
and then
gross.
Droz is, like, trying to yak into a bin, and Vince is going, he's going to puke! So that's, that's the tale of one Darren Drozdoff.
God.
The match begins, and we start with a collar and elbow tie-up. Do you like how I just completely segue from something really dark to, we're back in the match, guys, hey! Droz whips D'Lo, but gets shoulder blocked to the canvas. Hip toss countered by D'Lo, who connects with one of his own. In the corner, D'Lo opens up the Real Deal Butchers as he dishes out the chops. Corner whip sees Droz, I've put here, bounce right back and connect with a back elbow. Whip by Droz, who hits a power slam before mocking D'Lo in the corner. He takes too long goading as D'Lo attacks him from behind before connecting with the very same move that would paralyse Droz in 6 months' time. D'Lo ducks too early off the whip and gets a boot to the chest and a clothesline in quick succession. Very impressive split leapfrog by Droz, but D'Lo pauses right after and connects with a leg lariat. Leg drop by D'Lo, who adds his own little flourish before connecting with the move. Thumb to the eye from Droz, who unknowingly runs into a sky high from the former European champion. D'Lo heads to the top rope, but Dick Piercing shoves him to the canvas as the ref was distracted by Christ knows what. Like, I have no idea what distracted him. Droz finds his whip countered and he collides with Prince Albert, who is stood on the apron, knocking him to the floor. Droz follows out after him, and this allows D'Lo to slingshot himself over the top rope to the floor, connecting with both men for a crossbody. Decent.
Yeah, nimble for like a bigger guy.
Yeah, because he's like a 260-pound dude. Back in the ring, and I'll be honest, as much as I kind of almost mocked you for saying you really like D'Lo Brown, at that age, I found the little flourishes and stuff he did quite entertaining.
Yeah.
It was just, it gave him something different. Although it felt like he always had like a bulletproof chest pad on. I don't think it was in this match, but I'm sure it's later on it might have been 98 he had it. But either way, that's, a story for another time. Back in the ring, and D'Lo hits a body slam, but this time when he gets to the top rope, Albert is standing in the ring and press slams him with an accompanying sit out. which was interesting. This results in a disqualification as Ivory sprouts backstage. Sprints, I think, is what I've gone for there. Dross restrains D'Lo as Prince Albert removes his tools to pierce the nipples, I thought, but it's off the tongue.
And I was like, they're obviously not going to do this. But I was like, oh no, it just makes me feel...
You've never had a tongue piercing, actually, have you?
No, thank you.
I wasn't offering, clear.
It's something I've never...
No?
Other piercings, fine.
Well, yeah, you've done the belly button and ears.
No, I never did the belly buttons.
Oh, yeah, because of the cheerleading.
Yeah, but even... just the whole clamp and push through. Because even the ears, that's that bit there, they do the clamp and then they push the needle through. And I was just like, oh, no, it's gross.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
I was going to say, yours are exclusively to your ears.
Yes.
To be fair, there aren't exactly loads of places where you can have it apart from, like, the belly button, tongue, and I guess the, delicate nips. Areas. Oh, nips, yeah, I forgot about that. I think we had that conversation recently. We don't understand the purpose of it, do we?
Yeah, no.
Although I guess there isn't really a purpose to any piercing. It's just a choice, isn't it?
Whatever you like.
But here he comes, Holly. Sexual Chocolate hits the ring in a god-awful green suit and takes out both Albert and Droz. Mark Henry and D'Lo Brown embrace with Ivory joining in for good measure. They were both part of the Nation of Domination. So they've got that history there. And Holly, what did you think of this match and what did you score it?
It was all right. It again, was... very short, and I understand why they have to be, because they're trying to fit a lot into a smaller show. I get it. 1.5, actually.
Okay, I went 2, only because I couldn't really differentiate it from the Val Venus match in terms of quality, so I thought land it in the same place.
Fair.
And again, I think it being fast-paced helped.
Yeah.
Kevin Kelly interviews the New Age Outlaws. Kelly asks both men if they're prepared for their tag team title shot later tonight. Road Dogg says that from the top of their heads to the bottom of their toes, the New Age Outlaws are champions. The DOGG says that he and X-Pac are close personal friends, but Billy Gunn reminds us that there are no friends when it comes to the tag team titles. Apart from your tag team partner.
Well, yeah, surely.
Yeah, otherwise...
He went to marry his.
Well, it's because he looks so good to him. Good to him. The match. X-Pac and Kane versus the New Age Outlaws, WWF tag team titles. Did you, even with X-Pac in this, this is the good X-Pac phase, I'd say. If you're going to like an X-Pac phase, this will be the one.
Yes.
With the New Age Outlaws, how did we think, or how did you think this was going to pan out? Do you think this might be a decent match?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
I did.
Well, more for you. Well, no.
My first note says suck it, so... We'll see.
See, what is warm here, isn't it? Wow. This, to me, is probably the least offensive version of X-Pac.
Yeah.
Holly, would you agree?
Would, actually, yeah.
X-Pac gets a nice little pyro set in the ring as he chops away at his dingus. Classic Kane, almost back to his original guise here, and the champs noticeably have separate entrances. And come out first. Oh, you didn't know? The first time we heard this entrance theme for an episode of the podcast, I believe.
Yeah.
Your ass better call somebody. Billy Gunn is all business as he makes his way to the ring, and we hear Dode Dog welcome everyone to his doghouse. Oh, 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 oh. Which is where people didn't. Because at one point, what?
So I've got a note and I'd really hope you say it because I don't want to.
We're now treated to the ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of all ages routine, which has me feeling very nostalgic, and the crowd join him in full voice. However, instead of Billy Gunn reminding us what we can do if we're not down with that, he waves it off so the match can begin.
Uh-huh.
I don't think I have the comment then. What have you got?
The Outlaws. They always kick it doggy style.
They do always kick it doggy style.
Just...
Well, you've seen Road Dogg's pump handle slam, haven't you?
Yeah.
He is... backing that up is what he's doing. The contest starts with Road Dogg and X-Pac from their respective teams, and after a moment of circling, X-Pac applies a side headlock. This is transitioned into the hammerlock, but Road Dogg elbows his way free. After hitting the ropes, X-Pac connects with a lovely spinning heel kick. Road Dogg counters a hip toss attempt, but his is likewise countered, courtesy of a leg over the back of the neck flip out routine, which I don't know what it's called.
Yeah, I have no idea what that is, but
you know
like
what
it.
I mean.
Yeah.
However, the second hip toss attempt from the Road Dogg lands. X-Pac narrowly misses with a spinning kick that Jesse ducks and delivers a stiff right hand, having moments earlier popped out a little dance number. Now the two men have a standoff and both signal for each other to suck it.
Yep.
no thank you, on both counts. Billy tags himself in and walks chest to chest into Pac before shoving him into the corner where the big red machine tags himself in too. Wild right from Kane is ducked, allowing Gunn to unload with strikes against the buckles. Kane grabs the throat, marches out and tosses Gunn into the corner and begins unloading with the big rights of his own. Whip off the ropes and Kane connects with a big clothesline before connecting with a leg drop for a two count. There's only so many times you can put connecting, Scott, before it sounds redundant.
Mm.
Corner whip has Billy upside down in the corner before he eventually gives up on going over the ropes and crumples to the canvas on his face.
It's like he got halfway and went, we're not going.
Another wild right attempt from Kane is ducked and now Billy tries to capitalise on the arm using the ropes to bend the elbow joint. With his focus squarely on the right arm, Billy doesn't see the left coming and gets poleaxed. X-Pac signals he wants the tag and after some deliberation, Kane eventually does bring his partner into the match. Pac and Gunn trade rights until the former is whipped into the ropes and dropped with a shoulder tackle. Drop down and leapfrog by X-Pac, but he cannot avoid the dropkick that follows and Gunn unloads with right hands before tagging in Road Dogg. Billy is... I'm okay with the match so far.
So far, so good.
Billy is restraining X-Pac, but Dogg tells him to let him go, which he eventually does. Which he eventually does. Yeah, there's no more sentence there, Scott. Because as soon as I read how I wrote that down, my brain went frozen.
Okay.
Let him go.
Let it go.
Yeah, was where it went. Big right from the Dogg leads to a two count. Arm lock applied until Dogg tags in Gunn. Corner whip is followed up by a stinger splash from Billy and Mr. Ass signals for his fellow DX member to suck it. Another corner whip, but this splash is avoided and we get a Ric Flair face fall from the Outlaw.
Mm-hmm.
Kane gets the tag and connects with a big boot on Gunn before Road Dogg jumps in. Clothesline misses and the Dogg hits a series of jabs, but the big right that ends the sequence only sways the big red machine. Double team drop kick does cut the big man down and the shake, rattle and roll knee drop connects.
I like
shake,
that.
Rattle and roll. He's taken the Honky Tonk's move name.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. As the Outlaws think they have things right where they want them, Kane is back up and grabs Dogg by the throat and boots Gunn for good measure. Now the dopey twat has X-Pac by the throat as well. Before he can do anything, Gunn is back and boots him to the gut. Double team whip though sees Kane clothesline both men to the canvas. In the corner, and the Dogg manages to avoid a Bronco Buster as Kane has now grabbed Mr. Ass by the throat, which is a great sentence. Blatant low blow by Road Dogg, and the ref has to pretend it wasn't illegal whilst Gunn hits a Famasser. Two count for the challengers as X-Pac breaks up the fall. Gunn starts unloading on X-Pac, and Road Dogg tells him to ease off. As Billy has X-Pac above his head with a military press, Kane strikes the Dogg, causing him to collide with his partner, who drops X-Pac on top of himself, and this apparently is enough for the one, the two, and the three. The champions have retained their titles.
Mm.
I could tell by your noise you thought it was a bit of a shit ending.
Yeah, it's just, it's that not believable part, isn't it? Because that wouldn't, that's not going to render you helpless.
Yeah, I agree.
I understand.
I'm fine with the setup, but I don't think that should have finished it.
No.
So they could have done something else, I don't know what, but like a small package out of nowhere or something, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I did think this match was probably the best one we'd seen up to this point.
By far.
So what did you score it?
2.75.
Okay. So it was my highest, and I didn't think it... Yeah, I don't begrudge 2.75, but I thought 2.5, middle of the road,
yeah,
I was all right with it.
Yeah, I have put... I'm probably being a little bit over-generous... But that's because of what's come before. Do you know what I mean? So, like, give me something that's a little bit better and I'll be like, oh, amazing.
But this goes outside of your judge each match under its own weight.
Yeah, but...
That's different.
Yeah, that's different. I'm a complex, complex girl.
Aren't all women?
Yes.
Stone Cold in the dressing room. We briefly see Austin preparing with his braces and boots backstage. When we return from the commercial, we see a recap of the finale to the tag title match. In the parking lot, we see Road Dogg tell Billy to calm down and that they'll get another shot. Gunn says that he guarantees there will not be another shot with him. And we see backstage agents separate the two men. And yes, Holly, one of them is Sergeant Slaughter.
Yes, I did. I'd noticed him by his chin.
Yeah, well, it is a noticeable chin.
Yeah.
Now this.
Oh, this.
This moment.
This, I wish I had a drink when I watched this.
For me, we've covered a lot. In these 33 episodes.
Don't say that this is the worst.
For me,
ooh,
this might be the worst promo
really
I have ever heard from both men.
Really?
One was worse.
Oh yeah, well.
But one was still shite. And I think they're both worse than that Jerry Lynn promo we saw.
Wow.
This is atrocious.
I mean, I do give kudos to one person at the end of this.
Christian for saying fuck all.
I put Christian in this segment, pure genius.
Fuck all.
Because he says nothing.
Yep. The Brood make their way to the ring. Michael Hayes, a.k.a. Doc Hendricks, is standing in the ring and introduces us to the Brood. Gangrel, Edge and Christian all appear surrounded by flames from underneath the entryway, and I always thought this looked really cool, especially with the music as well. Don't let him talk. Don't let him talk ever. Commentary reminds us that the Brood were formerly a part of the Ministry, but went their separate ways, and this is teased as being the first time we will hear them speak. Oh, God. Cornette says that he believes these three men are the best prospects in the entire sport right now, which is a very bold claim.
Very.
Gangrel drinks the red liquid, because we can't say it's blood, and sprays it into the air. Gangrel finally speaks and says that the Brood originally chose not to speak, but were then forbidden from speaking by The Undertaker. Having heard Gangrel talk, his complete lack of vocal charisma helps me realise why he didn't talk up to this point. I like Gangrel as a character and wrestler to a point, but this promo is potentially one of the worst I've ever heard. This might actually be above the Jerry Lynn one from Judgment Day for me, and that's before we get to Edge.
Wow.
It also dawns on me that Gangrel looks like a council estate mum who's had more road miles on her fanny than a cross-country 18-wheeler.
I know exactly what you're talking about. That's so bad. So bad.
It's not wrong.
No, you're not wrong.
Gangrel then acts surprised at a line which hasn't been said yet by Doc, and then has to react once more when it is actually said. Do you know what I'm talking about? He like laughs and looks surprised, and I was like, he hasn't said it yet.
Yeah,
and then he says the line, then has to do it again.
It's weird.
So bad. So bad. Tell you what, if I ever get a cameo from Gangrel, fucking asking him about this. I'm sure he's a nice guy. I think his name's David Heath. Or and again, I like the character. The whole gimmick thing worked well. Wrestler was actually fine. He's had some matches that I've enjoyed. But this.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. Like, the voice doesn't match the look.
No, it doesn't at all.
Did you know he went into porn?
Stop it.
Yep. Gangrel's done porn.
Who is watching that?
Well, you in about 2 hours' time. Am I wrong?
I might have a look.
Of course you will.
Just to see.
Just to see if it matches.
Oh, God.
Does his pecker have fangs as well?
That's really weird.
Yep.
Oh.
Okay. Doc presents Christian the microphone when he suggests that some people don't understand their way of life. Christian pauses before just walking off. And I agree.
Good.
I wouldn't want to be associated with this one either, big man.
No.
Edge gleefully grabs the mic and says that it's only a matter of time before people do understand. His promo is only marginally better than Gangrel's, even if the women do scream for him.
All I'm looking at here is his teeth. Oh, it's so odd, but they're so nice and white. All I can look at is his teeth.
We are the unholy trio, and we will become what we will become. Get in the fucking bin with this load of shit. Really, really bad. Edge finishes with a cackling laugh, and Holly, please tell me this was an ick for you.
This did nothing. We know I like Edge in this sort of, like, get-up, but this was awful.
Dry.
Awful. Damn the Sahara.
Yes. I can only imagine. Doc says he doesn't know what they have been smoking and says that this is clearly just a gimmick and they're trying to get attention on themselves. For that, we can thank Doc for episode 1 on the audio cassette titled The Fundamentals of Professional Fucking Wrestling.
Obviously, it's a gimmick.
Everyone's a fucking gimmick.
So
the three men now circle Doc and ask him if he is not the one who is confused and reveal his real name is Michael.
God.
How the fuck is this still going on? The lights go out and the music plays as the Brood start attacking him. We hear demon-like voices before the lights return and Doc is on the floor, covered in blood.
Mm-hmm.
Billy Gunn backstage.
Yes.
The less said about that.
Give me anything backstage over that shite.
So bad. Billy is seen searching for that chicken X-Pac. And we go to commercial.
Yep.
Kevin Kelly interviews Ken Shamrock. Holly, tell me what you know about Ken Shamrock.
Not a lot.
Okay.
He did, didn't he do... Oh, I want to call it MMA, but I don't know if I'm wrong.
Yeah, MMA.
But he was quite good.
Yeah, well, he was one of those fighters that eventually had like a record that he lost way more than he won.
Right, okay.
Certainly towards the end.
He wasn't the worst wrestler that's gone into...
No, he was... He started his career... I want to say it started off in like shoot fighting, which is kind of halfway between wrestling and MMA.
Right.
But the first UFC was 1993 and he was in that.
Oh, okay. So he
was
did that first.
The runner-up to the eventual winner, Hoist Gracie. Hmm. But he had such a physical size as well that he basically stopped a lot of the people just doing what they wanted to do. You're nodding very excitedly about the man's physique.
He looks good.
Yeah, he's all right.
Yeah.
He looks like a...
He looks... Oh, what is the word? Like, you know, they... Oh, what do they call him?
Scott-esque. Is that what you're saying?
No, they call him something, don't they? Like, the most dangerous man or the...
The world's most dangerous man.
Thank you. But he does look imposing.
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. I won't fuck with him.
Absolutely not.
No. Yeah, it was... And do you know what? What he did in pro wrestling in WWF was good. Yeah. I enjoyed him in the WWF. He had good feuds with The Rock. Really good feud with The Rock, actually.
Okay.
I remember Mankind was involved in that at one point with the Intercontinental title as well, and there was a triple threat match. I want to say it was at Breakdown 98, which was a show that I had on VHS and is one that I'd probably like to rattle off at some point as well. So yeah, he certainly had... He did all right for himself, and then he eventually got pulled back into MMA.
Yeah.
So around 2005. So this is 99. By 2000... I think he'd gone to Pride, which was the Japanese big MMA promotion, and eventually made his way to UFC again around, I think it was 2005, he was one of the first coaches on The Ultimate Fighter,
reality
TV. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, really good show. Yeah. Even M would occasionally watch a little bit of that with me, because I found that fascinating. But then again, I'm a big MMA fan as well, as you can tell. Yeah, solid if unspectacular fighter who just never really kept up with the time, I would say, in terms of his skill development. But certainly he looked like what you would imagine a fighter would look like before you realised in MMA, it's not the size of the fighter, it's your skill set that will dictate how well you do. So Kevin says it's been a long week for Shamrock as he was assaulted by the Acolytes on Raw. Shamrock agrees and says that they cost him his match against The Undertaker. Shamrock says that he was raised fighting and he'll break Bradshaw's arms, legs and spirit. When he's through with all that, he'll beat the crap out of him some more.
Yeah, fine. Works.
Yeah. To the match. Bradshaw versus Ken Shamrock in a street fight.
Great.
Well, yeah.
In my head, I went, ooh, okay. But this is a little bit before Bradshaw...
The APA.
Yeah.
Short-haired Bradshaw with different theme music and two hooped earrings is a big no from me, lad.
Yes.
As he makes his way to the ring with a baseball bat in hand, he's blindsided by a running Shamrock who gets the jump on him. Shamrock is wearing what I thought was Stone Cold cosplay, as he's wearing like the gym shorts and the shirt, which
loose jorts though, which is it works.
Yeah, which is what how Austin would pretty much rock. Well, is it not too loose on Austin?
They're a little bit tighter, but
halfway between Cena and Austin. For the jorts. Elaborate the noise.
No, I can't describe it well enough.
Fair enough. So we'll be left with that noise and ponder what she actually meant. Yeah. Honestly, don't remember him ever wearing anything like this before, but I assume this was purely for the street fight gimmick. Bradshaw is sent face first into the ring post.
Drink.
And Shamrock narrowly misses caving his skull in with a baseball bat, which ricochets off the post instead. Bradshaw fights back with a kick and sends Shamrock into the ring steps. The action now heads into the ring and Bradshaw whips Shamrock into the corner and connects with a clothesline on two occasions. We now get an impressive fallaway slam from Bradshaw, which gets a near fall. Shamrock ducks a clothesline and hits a chop block to the front of the knee, and when I tell you it looks sketchy, I mean it looks sketchy. The sunset flip attempt that follows is even worse, but the world's most dangerous man transitions into a knee bar. Bradshaw looks in agony.
Agon.
And I thought he was going to tap twice, but he didn't.
Okay.
Eventually, the Acolyte crawls out of the ring, where Shamrock follows and sends him face first into the steel steps, before sending him flying over the timekeeper's table and laying in the boots on an upside down opponent. Shamrock goes and retrieves the bat and misses with another wild swing, instead connecting with a cloaked box of some description.
Yes.
What the fuck is that?
It was the table.
Was it the timekeeper's table?
But yeah, but it was because it had already been knocked over. Literally, it's like an MDF shell.
It's like
not a table.
A half flat pack of IKEA. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Bradshaw with a couple of boots. He sends Ken into the ring when he then connects with a bat shot to the gut and the back. The Acolyte looks to hit a home run, but Shamrock drops and hits a second front chop block. It's at this moment I see in the crowd a sign that reads 89 days until Raw is Jericho.
Oh.
I think that must have been Dave Meltzer attending the show in person, because this person knew things.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, he did appear. So this is April, and by late summer, Jericho was there doing the Raw is Jericho bit.
Hmm.
Interesting. Shamrock now has the bat and swings at Bradshaw's gut before levelling him with a blow to the head. Apparently, though, this is not enough to keep the big meaty lad down, and he gets back to his feet, where he is met with a bat to the throat and a choke from the world's most dangerous man.
Hmm.
Bradshaw is flailing away like a drunkard outside Wetherspoons at 2 a.m. and eventually falls to the canvas. He grabs hold of Tim White and eventually fades out as the referee calls for the bell.
Sure.
Shamrock is declared the victor but refuses to let go of the hold, and a sea of officials descend upon the scene to break the two men apart. This eventually proves fruitful, but poor old Sergeant Slaughter takes a couple of bat shots before we head backstage. Holly, thoughts on the match?
That ending, for me, so shit.
I didn't mind it, because you don't wake up from being choked out like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, logically, I'd rather that than I'm asleep, I'm awake.
I thought we were going to get that. I nearly teed you up for it.
But, I don't know.
No?
I just don't think I'm going to be happy with any of the results here.
No, that's fair. So, well, Ken won, so what are you scoring it?
1.75. Okay.
Not good, to be honest. Wasn't really a lot of wrestling,
no.
Which is understandable in a street fight.
Exactly.
Wasn't even a great street fight, though.
No.
So it was just kind of a shit brawl. So that's why I scored 1.75 rating myself.
Okay. Is that another type of match, a shit brawl?
Yeah, it's like a wank event.
Oh, okay.
You've got a shit brawl.
A left-handed wank.
A left-handed wank with just no puff finish. Of dust. We've got a double doink from the behind. From the behind?
From the behind.
From the behind, like on the line.
From the behind.
From the behind. Well, I'm sorry, that was a bit melodical. That was weird. Kevin Kelly interviews Mankind.
Mm.
In the boiler room of the arena, we see Mankind in his Mr. Socko era get asked about renewing his rivalry against the Big Boss Man. Mankind says that sometimes he thinks about just forgetting the whole thing and let bygones be bygones, but then UPN wouldn't have a great sports spectacular on their hands. Mankind introduces himself to any new audience members, saying he hangs around in boiler rooms as he likes the ambiance.
Mm.
He wears a leather mask to sell little dolls, and he wears a tie because it looks so damn good. He also tells us that he will ram the sock he is holding down Big Boss Man's throat, which also looks like him, because he can, and the audience seem to like it a lot.
I mean, logic.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
He's just explaining pro wrestling.
Yeah.
Have a nice day. We then hear Billy Gunn shouting in the distance, looking for X-Pac, and incredibly, Holly, I still couldn't give a shit about that running theme. Mankind hears it and says, "What a whiner." And I can tell you for free, that popped me, watching at home 25 years later. Corporate Ministry backstage. Shane O'Mac is given a pep talk to the troops who are assembled somewhere backstage, saying that Rock and Stone Cold will be in a lot of trouble before he's blissfully cut off, because I have had more than my fill of the seed spawn of Vince Jr. on this show.
Yes.
I thought I'd had enough, and then I see this match. Big Boss Man versus Mankind.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be honest, wasn't enthused about this match going into it.
No.
Thought it was going to be bad. Saw how much of the show was left. Knew it was going to be short.
Yes.
Because they still had the main event to get through.
They did. But this is how... So, Big Boss Man, this is how I remember him.
Yes.
Obviously, I've now seen him back before.
With a banging theme tune.
Yes. But this is how I remember him.
Yep. So you don't remember him as this version?
Well, I do now.
Well, of course you do.
But
because
I didn't then, no.
And is that your favourite version of Big Boss Man?
Mm. I feel
you
like
this one, the one we're seeing here?
No. I feel like, obviously before, because that's what I knew, but now I feel like it would go back to my shirt's unbuttoned because I've just got home from work.
Don't make me angry. There was no need. I was just thinking, I won't mention Big Bubba Rogers. And then, oh, dear. We've seen three iterations of Big Boss Man. The way Boss Man twirls the baton in his hand is admittedly very impressive.
Yes, it is.
Although I'll readily admit to not having the highest of hopes for this outing.
Okay.
Mankind gets a good pop as he makes his way to the ring, but sadly this is not the best version of Foley we'll see during a podcast episode.
I like the intro, though.
Do-do-do.
I really like that. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. I remember that from my little game.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
The moment Mankind slides into the ring, he's immediately booted in the back of the head before he can get to his feet and the bell sounds. With Mankind draped over the middle rope, Boss Man hits a running guillotine. Boss Man with a whip misses a clothesline and Mankind connects with a double arm DDT before signalling that it's time for Mr. Socko. Mm-hmm. Boss Man sees it coming though and flees the ring and looks to head backstage.
No.
Before he can make it very far, Test is behind him and rolls him back into the path of Mankind, who scores a 2 off a schoolboy pin. You got your second dose of Test.
Thank God.
You got 2 testicles.
Needed something here.
Right hands by Boss Man against the ropes, but the correctional officer charges and goes over the top. Now we see Big Show has arrived and in plain view of the ref, grabs him by the neck before press slamming him back into the ring over the top rope. Incredible strength.
That's so impressive.
By Big Show there.
So impressive.
As Boss Man staggers back to his feet, no disqualification, Mr. Socko tickles his tonsils and referee Teddy Long signals for the bell.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
Fine. I've just put super short, nothing really to it. It's just a tiny, tiny little story. Test coming out again. Yeah, fine. I gave it 1. That's so generous. So generous. And I know it's generous.
Is it Test?
I don't care.
And I thought I was being kind, because it should be a 0.
Oh, it should
I've
be.
Given it a 0.25 stars, because you got a second dose of Test.
Yeah. He got 1 this time.
Yeah, he did. I bet he did. Billy Gunn finds X-Pac. Backstage, we see Billy Gunn tackle X-Pac to the floor and unload with right hands until he's pulled away by Kane. Don't know why he's so upset at him.
It's just ridiculous.
As Gunn starts jawjacking, he comically misses the door handle on his first attempt before eventually walking out of the room. Mm-hmm. It's like, have you ever had it where, because I've seen it before, where a girl at school was having a bit of a tantrum.
Right.
Must have been like year 9 or something. And she just wanted to storm out of the, I think it was science of some kind that we were in. And she went, oh, I'll just fucking leave then. Walks out, slammed the door, and it went, and it was a slow closing door, so you could see her stomping off in the distance, and it just didn't have the desired effect. Just got those vibes when Billy was like madly trying to scrabble for the door. From here, we see The Rock hock a fat loogie at a wall as he makes his way to the entrance for the main event of the night.
Vile.
And we also are shown a more respectable, non-gozzing Stone Cold doing the same. How's Stone Cold coming across as a more civilised man?
No, but honestly, that's vile.
It's just off the
gross,
wall.
Absolutely gross.
You wouldn't even want Tess doing that.
No.
Depends where he's aiming. Triple H and Undertaker with China, the Mean Street Posse, Paul Bearer and Shane O'Mac versus The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin. What's wrong?
You're a dick.
Okay, well, yeah, that's one option, I guess. Speaking of spitters, Triple H walking out to Shane O'Mac's music in a strange sight. Strange sight.
I've literally just put, I don't like this version of Triple H.
Oh.
Not for me.
Taketh away.
Yeah, and he still taketh away at the next programme that I've already started watching as well.
What bit? Oh, we can't discuss it.
No.
You nearly did, though.
Yeah, I can't.
Who? Do we take away?
Well, as in, he's still there, but he just looks equally ridiculous.
Equally ridiculous. Okay, I'm going to have to scrabble through my mental notes on that one. Holly, what do we make of Taker's theme and look here?
Right. It's so
the rudeness
stupid.
Has started again.
Again, having seen it previously... Now, I'm like, oh, okay.
I wasn't overly fussed about this era.
As
in, I didn't hate it. The Dead Arse,
Dead Arse
American
comes
Dead Arse is
soon,
the worst.
Right?
That comes in 2000. So okay. Yeah, soon. Not far. Oh god.
See, I'll be happy then.
Yeah, you will.
Mainly just because of the music, but.
Yeah, and then you'll see him wrestling. You go, oh. Mm.
Well, I still watch him now wrestle and go, oh, okay.
No, he's done now.
No, I was in here. You do.
Oh. Rude. After I gave you tests twice in an episode. Ouch. That's unbelievable. In another strange sight, a relatively low-key Rock makes his way to the ring, but is hesitant to get into the ring until Triple H and Taker look to encircle him outside. As they do, he slides under, but is quickly overwhelmed 2-on-1 until the glass shatters.
Mm-hmm.
Fully tights-wearing Triple H charges up the aisle to meet the Rattlesnake, who throws his title into the air to clip the Future Game with a right hand. Face first goes Triple H into the ring post.
Drink.
As the two men continue their brawl on the outside, and Rock gets an elbow up on the dead man charge in the corner.
This was absolute chaos to write down anything for.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm following along. I've got all my notes here.
Yes, you have.
They're all very much so there.
Some of them have like 5 words.
Yeah. I don't need to bring the details.
No, that's fine.
You told me on the really shit ones you might hand it over to me, and I've escaped that this time, so we're fine.
Yeah, I was feeling generous because I thought you'd just kind of go,
Much appreciated.
You're welcome. That's what I'm here for, to make your life easier. That sounded sarcastic. I wasn't going for that, believe it or not. It was a genuine comment. Now Stone Cold and Taker go at it in the ring, with the dead man getting the better of the exchange until he whips Austin and is caught with a Fez press and right hand. A running forearm drop connects, and Triple H has to break up the pin. No tag, but who gives a fuck, mm-hmm. as Triple H unloads with boots in the corner to the Rattlesnake. Austin gets whipped into the buckles, but ducks the following clothesline before finding a Stone Cold stunner blocked. High knee from Triple H, who body slams the champion before missing a knee drop. Austin with a whip, but finds himself dropped with a face buster from the Game. 2 count, that's it. Corner beat down on Stone Cold, and the champion is now sat atop the buckles where he eats a big right hand. What's your note say?
I'm so stupid. So when it's like, there's a lot of people, and by a lot, I mean 4. And they've all got quite long names, apart from Triple H and The Rock, right?
Austin, Rock, Triple H, Taker.
And I've written Cold in the corner.
Look, it's his surname.
I've looked at it and I'm like, what? What does that even mean?
Stone then in the realized, corner.
Then realised.
Love that. Means. Cold in the corner.
It is cold in the corner.
Not in this bloody room, I tell you that. Out. Triple H looks for a superplex, but is shoved to the canvas, and Cold connects with a double axe handle from up on high.
Please don't stick with that.
Pebble gets tagged and fires off a series of big rights until Ha 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 gets a thumb to the eye and tags in the Deedman.
Stop it. Okay, Rock, please stop.
Rock connects with a quick clothesline, however, and behind.
Ooh. Ooh. Uh-oh.
Rock connects with a quick clothesline, however, and behind, firing away on Taker. I think that means begins. Because he didn't go behind and start firing away on Taker.
Maybe he did, but maybe that was later.
Yeah, he wanted to test his candy ass. The third generation star ducks too early, and Taker drops him with a running DDT that earns a near fall. Big strikes from Undertaker, but he makes the same mistake as The Rock moments before by ducking his head too early for a DDT. Triple H breaks the pin attempt that follows, but this time exits the ring rather than taking over. Reversing a whip, Rock ducks a clothesline, and both men connect on the follow-up double variant, which results in both Rock and Taker being down on the canvas.
Mm-hmm.
Corner whip sees Rock look to hit a Rock bottom, but again, the Game is in to break it up. But so is Austin, and this one begins breaking down rapidly.
Yes.
Stone Cold stomps a mud hole on Triple H in the corner before walking it dry, and now the corporate ministry descend into the ring. The match is over before it ever really got underway, as Earl Hebner signals for the bell.
But he's back, people. He's back.
Before we get into all that shithousery, what do you score that match?
What did I score that match? Sorry, because I think I scored it further down. 1.75.
2.
Yeah, fair.
I gave it 2 because...
there is something in there.
And it's no worse than the other ones I've given 2.
No.
It's just... I get it. Again, it's the end of a show. They didn't have much time.
Yeah.
It's chaos, mm-hmm. but it was like, I'm now done a bit with the chaos.
How many matches did we see an actual pin?
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we saw pins, but not...
like, finish, like winning by a pin. That's what I thought.
Well, okay, Owen Hart pinned.
Yeah.
But that was after a dick punch.
Yeah.
On the outside, and that is it. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Just leaving that there.
Yeah. Yeah. Simmer. You leave it there. Big Show, your boy Tess. You got three testicles.
Yes.
You got two testicles and a shaft. And Shamrock all hit the ring and fight the corporate ministry away until we are left with the four men from the tag team match that originally started it. Rock sends Triple H to the floor and Taker drops Austin with a big boot in the centre of the ring. The Rock and Triple H are now brawling into the crowd and Taker, although he finds his attempt at a tombstone thwarted, does connect with a chokeslam to the champion. Shono Mac has a chair on the outside and throws it into the ring despite the efforts of Vince McMahon, who has now also run to be at ringside. Fucking horrendous right hand attempt by Shane is blocked by the chairman, who returns a shitty right hand of his own, flooring his son. As Taker lifts the chair above his head, Vince tries to wrest the weapon from the dead man, who instead delivers a monstrous blow to the head of the chairman.
Mm.
Michael, that was a straight on chair face.
Yeah.
Chair to the face.
Chair face.
Yeah, it's a new villain that I'm trying to do for a horror film. Chair face.
Okay. It's like in Scream, it's called Ghostface, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, this one's chair face.
Chair face. Their face is a chair.
Yeah, their face is a chair. So, like, if he's not oiled properly, you can hear him talking. It's like...
Oh, like, okay, I like it.
Yeah, so when
okay.
you hear squeaking, you're like, oh, shit. Ooh. Chair face is about... We got Leatherface as well. Yes. Isn't there a Baghead as well? I've seen like, all hey, this stuff.
I think trademark it.
Chair face. Yeah. Great. If that is my lasting contribution to the world, I have made errors. I have made a lot of errors in my life. And that's just beside the point. Shono Mac has a chair on the outside. Oh, we've done that. There we go. Michael Cole screams that Vince has sacrificed himself for Stone Cold as Taker stares down at Vince's lifeless body.
Mm-hmm.
From behind, hello. Stone Cold hits a stunner on Taker, and of course his theme music plays.
Yeah.
Because you hit a stunner, your theme music is guns to play. Meanwhile, Shane slides into the ring and starts hitting right hands on his father. But not for long. Stone Cold stands beside Shano and flips him the birds before grabbing him by the blazer. Shane is frantically trying to escape the rattlesnake's clutches, but eventually succumbs to the inevitable Stone Cold stunner, and his music hits for a second time.
Yep.
Austin celebrates with a few dozen cans of beer and even pours one on the face of the unconscious Vince to bring him back to life as the show goes off the air.
Yes.
Holly.
I like that ending. Yeah. I mean, to be honest, that when Stone Cold does that, I love that. When he gets the beers and the...
It's a comfort blanket, isn't it? Yes,
for sure.
Have you ever done the Austin beer drink?
No. No. I feel like that would be a bit messy for me.
You should. In fact, I'll get you two cans after this.
Is it because I've got a white t-shirt on?
Is it what, sorry?
Is it because I've got a white t-shirt
on? I hadn't even noticed, to be fair. No, it's just also, as we're talking about it now, really. That was really mainly what I thought about it.
Okay.
Is that a no?
Maybe another time.
All right, fair enough.
Ask me it when we go progress, when I've had a few beers.
You always wear dark colours to progress.
For that reason.
Yeah, fair. Yeah, fair. I have seen you spill beer. What did you think of the show as an overall product and package?
It's not really hard. I'm going to say it's really hard, but it's not really hard.
Oh, sorry, I'll cross my legs.
When you think about it, like, logically, there wasn't really that much. Like, I didn't rate anything really highly, but weirdly did quite enjoy it. It was an easy watch.
It was chaos.
Yes.
And you didn't really get a chance to kind of dwell on things. No. There was only one part, well, two parts, I would say, where my interest started to really wane.
Oh, my interest at the beginning was gone already.
That was the second worst, the Brood, for me, really. Yeah. Just because of how bad and painful the whole thing felt.
That was bad, but for me, that's one of those things that I watch it and go, oh, this is so bad. It's like it's so cringe, but I can't help but watch it.
Yeah, okay.
It's not so bad, it's good. It's not Kiss Cam.
Carly Kiss Cam.
Yeah, it's not that.
I always forget about that.
Peaked me. That was brilliant.
Yeah, you went through like a proper little emotional roller coaster, didn't you?
I hated it, I loved it. I hated it, I loved it.
And now it's the best thing that you reference every show now.
Yes.
The Carly Kiss Cam.
That's what these things have to live up to, I'll be honest.
Well, yeah, quite.
So as a whole, it was fine. But I do think that's... If I cut out the beginning... If I cut out all that chatter at the beginning, it'd be like an hour and 10 minutes long.
Yeah.
And that would be fine.
What are you scoring it then?
I scored it... Oh, that's very high. Gosh. I mean, I can't change it now.
You can't, because you haven't said it.
4.25 out of 10.
That's not high.
Do you not think that's high? Yeah. In comparison to the ratings I've given the matches?
No, because I'd give it a 5.5. Okay. And your highest rating was higher than mine.
Okay.
Because of the pace of it.
Yeah.
Even though if you look at each individual component, it doesn't work. It's like...
Yeah.
Okay. It's like, to use a football analogy...
Oh, gosh.
Leicester winning the Premier League. You look at the individual parts and you go, no, 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 no. Oh, it did something when all put together. So that's how I'm kind of viewing this.
Okay, fair.
It's got some good moments in it as well that kind of carry the rest of the not so good moments. Yes. So, yeah, I was going to say, like, 5.5 would probably be where I land on this, just because it was fine. And we've definitely seen a lot worse. Definitely seen a lot worse.
For sure.
And that kind of pops that blue cherry.
Yeah. Bringing
Cherry's the end done. To the fact we need to find another shorter episode for one.
I do. I'm very sorry.
No, that's fine. You've got engagements and busy social life
busy
and
girl.
Busy work life as well.
Yeah.
So I'm sure we'll dig out something for that. But the next one, of course, is back to the March through the Manias and WrestleMania 12.
Yeah.
Which we're both in the midst of watching at the moment.
Yes.
I think it'll be fun. I've got so many stories.
Oh, okay.
So many stories for you on that one. So
yes, because you've told me a few things to not Google, haven't you?
I have, yep. Yeah. Which, if there's anything I want to see Holly's live reaction for, I will drop a message to say, please avoid looking this up.
Yes.
But before we go anywhere...
Okay.
You're going to do the socials? No. It's been that long. It's been 2 weeks and you've forgotten the socials already.
My one job.
I'll fill in some time whilst please Holly bring those up.
I mean, to be honest, I think I know them, but I'm not confident enough in myself to be able to do it off...
I believe in you.
Off the... I don't believe in me. I don't. WinTwicePod@gmail.com.
And what can they do there, Holly?
Email you.
With what?
Anything they like.
No, not with anything they like. Wrestling fans are mental.
Okay? Suggestions of what to watch.
Yeah, suggestions of what to watch. And if you know about an upcoming show that we're trying to be more responsive on advertising on YouTube before the event, although I'm pretty sure we've let that slip again. But that's fine. We're all busy people. Obviously, you can put comments on there. But yeah, if there's a show suggestion and your thoughts on a show that you want to put that I can read out during a recording, then the email is probably the best place to do it.
Yeah, don't come to Instagram, because that's me.
Said, and by the way, more people have come to Instagram than they have on the emails. That's because they're more interested in engaging with you.
Aww,
you're the star attraction.
That's nice. That's absolutely not true. But that is WinTwicePod as well. On Instagram, YouTube, everything. Oh, what's the one?
Twitter?
Yeah, but it's not that anymore. Thank you very much.
So yes. I've tried to be more... proactive. I've set up a Twitter. I'm going to call it Twitter because the next account sounds like we're doing porn, which isn't on the books
yet.
Something to that'll be a special subscriber account. Oh, 10,000 subscribers, sex. What? Not with the 10,000 people. That'd be a fucking nightmare.
Wow.
Could you imagine the amount of cleanup duty?
I'd be a tired girl.
I like the fact that you're assuming that they're all coming
for you. They're all men, surely.
They're all coming for you, quite literally. Yeah.
No, that's so grim.
Yeah, I'm sure there'd be something.
Stop.
Hey, hang on.
No, you carry on for you.
Brilliant, thank you.
Stop.
Now that's a train right there, too.
Yeah, it is.
But yeah, until then, like I said, the next one, I think we're recording on a Monday as well, so that will be a day outside of our usual schedule. But as long as it's Sunday or Monday, that's kind of in keeping with what we do anyway.
Monday Mania
indeed. I've enjoyed myself. Hope you have as well, Holly.
Had a lovely time.
Good, it's always nice to do this after a hectic day of work.
Yeah.
And until next time, everyone, take care, and we'll see you at the next one.
Bye.
Until next time, this has been a Win Twice Wrestling production. Peace out.